Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Off the Glass Nothing But Net and Up and Under networks. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today.
All right, Pelicans fans, welcome back for the latest edition of The Bird Calls, the official podcast of thebirdrights.com. I'm David Grubb, and this is our wild card edition of the Anthony Davis Trade Extravaganza podcast series. I don't know if that's the official name, but that's what I just said. As usual, I am joined by contributors Kevin Berrios and David Fisher, and our editor-in-chief, Ollie Cosell. A busy day, guys, kind of, sort of. The Anthony Davis, David Griffin meeting took...
I'm Scott Trout, CEO of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. We help men deal with the life changes triggered by divorce, such as child custody and property division, among many others. But life changes also occur after divorce. These changes can make parts of your existing court order irrelevant or harder to follow. If you feel a modification to your court orders might be necessary, talk to us at Cordell & Cordell. We're a partner men can count on.
Contact CordellCordell.com. 1065 East Hillsdale Boulevard, Suite 310, Foster City, California, 94404.
Place in some shape or form today. Ollie, since you're the main man and you're plugged in probably a little bit better than us, what do you know, if anything, about today's meeting? And did any of the news that came out surprise you?
No, it falls right in line with what I've expected. And as I've been telling you guys behind the scenes or, you know, on social media, that I have no anticipation of Anthony Davis changing his mind, even really opening up to the possibility of sticking with the New Orleans Pelicans. So hearing Sham say that's highly unlikely that his stance has changed, but yet the fact that dialogue is going to continue, I think what I'm reading out of it is it's not going to be Griffin trying to keep on convincing him to stay. It's going to be more so trying to find some workable future, and that involves a trade. Where does Anthony Davis want to go? But at the same time, Dave Griffin's got to make sure that New Orleans Pelicans' best interests are still maintained. So I think that's probably what it's going to entail. And my hope is that please let this deal or whatever that they're going to be working on comes to fruition sooner rather than later. You don't want to start the season with Anthony Davis still on the team. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of people talking about, hey, let's just keep him to the trade deadline. We can maybe convince him. I'm not in that boat. I think that ship has sailed, and there's no reason to start off. And we've talked about, all of us have talked about this, that it would be too disruptive, yada, yada, yada. We've got our future already in tow. We've got to trade Anthony Davis now to get the best possible chips and just move on. I think it's high time. And I think today was just further confirmation of that fact.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that really interested, you know, I just think about Griffin's history. When Kyrie asked to go, he was gone. That didn't let it linger into the next season. And that would be my, you know, our closest experience with a superstar under Griffin asking to leave his situation. So I think that portends well for the idea that AD will not be around by the time the season starts. Fish, you've always pushed the line that this trade has to be agreed to basically by draft night for it to benefit the Pelicans in the best possible manner. Do you think that the negotiations here, because, you know, already we know Shams is close to clutch. So do you think that this gets any less public than it did when the Pelicans negotiated with the Lakers during the season?
I think it will be less public. You can hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it will be less public than it was under Demps at least the negotiations outside of the Lakers. I mean, who knows what the Lakers organization is going to do or what's going to leak or whatever. Because, I mean, there's a lot of competing ideologies and mindsets in the Lakers front office. And there's no way that the negotiation is just going to be between Griffin and Pelinka. I mean, other people are going to be involved. I mean, the front office isn't run where just the top guy does all the investigation, all of the negotiation, and everybody else just kind of sits on their hands in the front office. If that was the case, why did they all have jobs? So negotiating with the Lakers, stuff's going to get leaked out of the Lakers front office. I have no doubt about that. And Boston has a history of trying to play the media. So you have to expect that stuff's going to come out of Danny Ainge's office. And if it progresses that way, I would think that David Griffin's going to play along and he's going to have to play offers off one another. And he may do that through back channels or he may do that through the media. One of the things I think that we have learned just in the past month and a half that Griffin has been in charge is that the Pelicans front office now won't allow narratives about the Pelicans to go unchallenged in the media. He will reach out to high level reporters and say, actually, no, this is what's happening. I think that's what happened when the Gail Benson over her dead body trading with the Lakers happened. So if the trade is eventually going to be discussed very publicly because of the number of teams that you might have involved, and just you're not going to be able to keep that many lips shut. And if that's the case, I fully expect that Griffin's going to play along and he's going to play that game too. And what we've seen so far is he's going to play to win.
Kevin, after what we've seen this week, ESPN did a really deep dig on the Lakers front office and the problems that they were having. One of the most notable figures in that was Rich Paul, the lead agent at Clutch Sports, and Anthony Davis' agent, of course. And we saw not only what he did with the Lakers in that article, but of course we saw what happened in New Orleans with Anthony leaving games early, with the trade demand and the information that reliably we think was leaked from Rich Paul about negotiations. Considering all the stuff you learned about with the Lakers, considering the things that we already do know about Rich Paul, how are you concerned are you if Rich Paul and Anthony Davis do come back into the Pelicans organization this year on what damage it could do to the overall tenor of the team?
I mean, that's a huge concern. We've been talking about it all this through this whole series that, you know, you don't want the guy on 2 weeks' notice to be around training the new face of the franchise. And we talked about, you know, AD's relationship with Boogie and how he was upset when Boogie was getting a lot of the shine and how that's going to be with a 19-year-old kid, especially with somebody like Rich Paul in his ear and his dad in his ear saying, you know, you should be the one that's getting all this acclaim, these commercials, this fan support, all of these things. You know, it's just a bad situation and you see how they handle things. You know, you see the t-shirt thing, the that's all folks thing. You see leaving early, as you said, you know, it's just a track record of bad behavior and handling things in a very immature way. So you don't want to bring that in, especially when you have a lot of young guys around that turns this thing into a circus. And you don't want these young foundational pieces that you will have like Zion and whoever else you get experiencing that. You want it to be a business setting from day. I mean, you want it to be fun, of course, but you want it to be, you know, a streamlined culture of seriousness and work and laying the groundwork for where you're going to build this team. And you don't want these distractions that you don't need in the locker room. And, you know, you can't trust that this agency will handle things in a professional manner because they haven't. You would hope that they learned from the circus they created and how it backfired on them and how it basically ensured that they weren't going to get what they wanted last season. But you can't guarantee that they learned from it. So, like we all, I think we all believe, as David said, you know, and as Ollie said, you want this done on draft night or at least before, you know, training camp starts, because you don't want that around.
Yeah, I think the element of Zion Williamson coming in and off of his national fame, he's already got more followers than AD on Instagram. He's going to have a shoe deal immediately. It's probably his own shoe his rookie year. He's going to get commercials out the wazoo as a rookie. I just don't see, even if you took all the other stuff that we know about AD as far as his agency, before, if it had been under his former agent, Thad Fouché, I think that situation alone would just rub AD. Like you said, he's a thin-skinned guy in that regard. I think things bother him very easily. And I just don't see how he and Zion ultimately. And then again, with Drew's ascension too, I think we also sometimes forget to remember that, is mm-hmm. that in the eyes of the fans, Drew is as close to Drew Brees, you know, right now as what we have in this city. Everything that Anthony Davis we thought he was has been now hoisted upon Drew Holiday. And so I think that is a problem too for Anthony Davis if he were to try to return to that line.
Is it fair to say that Drew is Drew Brees and Anthony Davis is Joe Horn after, you know, that off locker room incident, you know, like, but you know what I'm talking about. Like, is that
when it was just
here, kind of,
it was just time for Joe Horn to see someplace else. It was just for the sake of the locker room, it was time for somebody to go, and it ended up being Willie Rope. But okay.
Yeah. One other thing I want us to touch on before we get to our trades is the mm-hmm. good news. I think actually all you guys would agree with that, is the fact that CAA, the NBA agency, very famed. They've got like Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade, a whole slew of guys, D'Angelo Russell, under their wing, are presumably the favorites to sign Zion Williamson, when we had been hearing that he may go with, you know, Rich Paul and Clutch Sports. So let me ask you this, Fish, since I know you've been following this closely as well. How excited are you by the fact that Zion is presumably going to sign with CAA? How big of a deal is it? And how important is it for New Orleans to basically break free of any kind of Clutch Sports, at least, you know, for the next couple of years, considering what had happened in light of the Anthony Davis trade request?
Well, I mean, you can just look back to the Anthony Davis situation before he changed agents when he was under Thad Fouché. It was no drama. I mean, he spouted the same corporate BS about, you know, his long-term plans. But despite that, there was just no drama around it. And I think if he hadn't changed agents, that wouldn't have changed the fact that Anthony Davis was probably going to end up requesting a trade. But it probably would have been done at the end of the season instead of in the middle of it. It wouldn't have been done through the media like it was. And it wouldn't have been, I need to go to the Los Angeles Lakers, which happens to be the team where my agent's premier client actually works. So I think that's a great thing. We've seen just New Orleans has seen CAA in action for quite some time, actually, because Tom Condon, who represents Drew Brees, works under CAA's agency as well. So what we think we should expect, number one, you look at the CAA's client list in the NBA, players who have had substantial shoe and other endorsement deals, much more so than Anthony Davis has had on a national scale. And that's obviously going to be something that is huge with Zion. Zion is very likely to have his own signature shoe as a rookie, which is rare, but that's kind of the persona that he has built from high school through his time at Duke to this point. And CAA has the experience doing that. And then, I mean, just the rest of it, you can just expect a very business-like relationship without a lot of the BS that we've seen with the Rich Paul experience.
I think I think the one thing too about CAA, that the difference, I think part of this could also be driven by the fact that Zion is trying to forge his own identity. And again, when you come under that Clutch umbrella, it's LeBron and then the rest of you. And we just, I mean, that's just the way it is. So if you're Zion Williamson and you're looking to, and people have told which money is in front of you, well, why would you want to, again, be attached to somebody else's name for the basically the length of your career? You're always going to be hitched to LeBron James in some way when you're with Clutch. That's just, and I think Zion is looking to create his own identity in that regard because we really don't know him yet. And I think that he wants us to. It just seems that there is a lot of personality there that we have yet to see. That's just my take on that.
So are you saying that CAA is Death Row Records? You won't have to produce Branson in the video?
You certainly won't see the agent yet. Won't be all up in the Smoothie King Center, you know? Won't be dancing in the pregame video.
Hey, and as our friend Ryan Hebert pointed out, CAA also represents Leonardo DiCaprio. So there you go.
Maybe Leo stopped by. He likes New Orleans.
He does.
There was an article today that I read before we get into the trade ideas, and it kind of it made me laugh a little bit because it shows really two things: how close we have been to nailing the way the impressions are around the league about the assets for Anthony Davis. And then the other part is just how just that there isn't a whole bunch of variance from league personnel in their opinions on how much Davis should get. This is from hoopsrumors.com. Okay, and I'm just going to do this real quick. They ranked their top 25 assets presumed Anthony Davis contenders. This was written by Chris Krause, who writes for CNBC and is a credentialed NBA writer. So this isn't just some random blog, just for the listeners and for maybe you guys too. So they rate Jason Tatum as the number one asset for anybody in this thing. Two is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Three is the Knicks pick at three. Okay. So they value Tatum as a sure thing. They're saying he may never be an MVP, but he's as close to a sure thing as there is. Gilgeous-Alexander, again, his value is his size, his rookie deal. And some people think around the league that he has a higher ceiling than Jason Tatum. He may not have, you know, get to the same level, but there are a lot of people in the league who view him as he would have been the second overall pick in this year's draft if he was coming out. So we're close there. Number four, they have the Lakers pick at four, Memphis's top 2020 pick at five, Lonzo Ball at six. And again, we've talked about that. Lonzo is a highly valued player around the league. A lot more highly valued than he has been by fans. The Mavericks pick is at seven in 2021. Kuzma is at eight. Jaylen Brown is at nine. Now, this is when they lost me. Kevin Knox at 10. And Mitchell Robinson at 11. 12 through 14, Landry Shamet, the Miami's 2021. And the number 14 this year from Boston. Then Gallinari. Then it's just picks. Then Dennis Smith and Brandon Ingram. And then at the bottom, they have Marcus Smart, Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams, Josh Hart, Jerome Robinson from the Clippers, Mo Wagner from the Lakers, and Frank Ntilikina. So, I mean, generally, our top value is pretty much in line with what people are thinking around the league. So I'm proud of us in that regard, that it doesn't seem like we're throwing out wild stuff and hoping it sticks. Is there anything just out of that, the way that list went down with player rankings, that you guys kind of, that sticks out to you guys, or just anything that you would probably dispute?
Let me ask you guys this. Do you think that one of the reasons Tatum is more valuable perception wise is because of the position he plays? Cause it's way harder to find a wing than it is to find a point guard, especially when you look at next year's draft, when there's going to be so many point guards in it. Do you think that's one of the reasons he edges out Shai, or do you think he's like heads and shoulders above him?
I personally think the perception is that it's the Boston market. They label Jason Tatum as the next coming, and they've already written off whatever woes that he suffered through this year as simply because of that fit up in Boston. I don't think, honestly, it has anything more to do with than that. I mean, I've told you guys, I almost slightly prefer Shai Gilgeous-Alexander over Jason Tatum one-on-one if I could choose either of the two players, but I don't think there's much differential. I don't have a problem with those. I have issue with stuff later on in their rankings, though.
Yeah.
But I'll let you guys, if you want to talk about that first.
No, I mean, yeah, I think Carroll's way too low. You know, Shamit's probably a little too low, too.
Way too low, yeah.
I think some of these picks are very overvalued. You're saying something, Fish?
Yeah, I'm surprised, and I'm not a Brandon Ingram fan, but I'm surprised that they have him listed that far down.
Mm-hmm. That's got to be a health thing, though, right?
I mean, that has to be built almost solely on the fact that, you know, his medical issue is one that the only times we've really ever heard of it is a Chris Bosh situation. It's not something that you've heard of NBA players dealing with frequently. And then Marcus Smart being that low, because you have both his value on the court and then the relative value of his production and his contract value. I mean, we're talking about somebody who just made the All-NBA, All-Defensive team. And I think a lot of that's just the fact that so much around the league, defense isn't valued by people who cover the league as much as I think as it should. Because Marcus Smart, of everything that anybody listed on that, is by far the best defender. And if you're going to tell me he's 17 or 18 or 19, I want to know what basketball game you've been watching where it only counts for counting stats and not defense. Mm-hmm. Right, because what I'm seeing in the playoffs is defense matters a whole lot.
Yeah, because Ingram, I think that they have both the health risk listed as well as the fact that he's extension eligible, and you don't know his health is. But to have him all the way down at 20 just seems, you know, very iffy, especially when you have him three spots beneath Dennis Smith Jr., who we like, but I don't think his best year was as good as – I mean, his best stretch was as good as Ingram's best stretch last season.
We like Dennis Smith Jr.?
No, I like him. I don't love him. I mean, I like him. I think he has athleticism.
I mean, I'm okay with him being a throw-in, but I'm not excited about it.
No, he would not be the lead.
I'm definitely like, okay, we'll give him a chance, sure. But
yeah, that's as far as I'm not calling him a franchise player. But I mean, I that's what I'm saying. I think it's weird for Ingram to be behind Dennis Smith.
And here's another weird one. Kyle Kuzma at 8. I mean, and he's ahead of Jaylen Brown. At 9. I mean, you've already touched on Kevin Knox at 10. That's just laughable. But, you know, having Kuzma up there and then reading what they wrote about it, saying that there's some that think he's a lot closer to Tatum, that he deserves probably even a higher ranking. I don't know what basketball they watched either. You know, he's a volume shooter who's not good at shooting. What else does he do? Nothing. So that one blows my mind. So I disagree staunchly with that one.
And that gets back to defense on my mind, is that Kyle Kuzma is not – he has yet to demonstrate that he wants to be a defender in the NBA. And I just – it feels like a ranking that largely went by which names have we heard of the most and then points per game.
Mm-hmm. And that's, because they're high on Shamit.
They now put him at 12. He needs to be in the top 10.
I think so, too. I mean, he needs to be higher than Knox. I don't get that. Because for instant production as a trade asset. Because there are people, I mean, on their list, when they're talking about Knox, this is where it blows me, is that some, this is a quote, some would rather have Knox over Dallas's 2021 pick. And then they're saying that Knox is right there with the number 3 pick this season as the team's top asset.
That's impossible. This is a bad draft, and there's no way that's true. I mean,
the Knicks front office wrote that those two paragraphs.
those lines just really threw me off. Now they are high on Shamit. They think that he had a great, you know, second half of the season, that he flew under the radar, which is all true. But to have Gallinari down at 14 again, an expiring deal, multifaceted player, I just think that's too low. If you're the Pelicans, again, and we've discussed this thoroughly, that's a great deal to have. Yeah. It's a great deal to have.
Especially when, you know, we keep going back to what Griffin said he wanted, a young player and a nice veteran role player, and you can't ask for a better veteran role player than Gallinari. You know, like, he does everything you want. Defends, can shoot, can handle, can pass, you know, plays within the team. I mean, his contract's big, but like you said, it's an expiring, and then it won't be as big going into the next season, most likely, if you want to bring him back. So, yeah, I mean, I would have him over Knox, probably. Even like Knox doesn't
easily, Easily.
Doesn't, you know, I mean, I understand upside, but there's imagined upside, perceived upside, perceived value, and what you're actually going to ever get and cash in on. And you know where Gallinari far exceeds whatever I think Knox could ever turn into.
To bunch Smart, Harrell, and Williams together at 21, and to say that those guys, to acknowledge the fact that Harrell is a steal at $6 million, you acknowledge that Lou Williams is still a steal at 32 years old, making $8 million, and you know that Smart, again, we talked about his value. I just find that insane to have those three players that low behind some picks that, you know, like the Sixers 2020 protected first round pick. How can those players be less valuable than a protected pick in 2020?
What I'm thinking right now is we should do a podcast just on this and come up with our own rankings.
We could do our own rankings. Yeah. But that I just, when I saw this today, it Eric Asher, who Ollie and I have appeared on his show many times, he sent this and he was just like, it's a must read. So, of course, when somebody sends me something like that, then I like the guy, I'll read it. And I read it, and I was just like, some of this is just insane. And now you guys have seen that some of it is insane. So it was a must read to make me twitch.
Ollie, why don't you put together a list of all the sort of the main assets that we talk about, send it to everybody, and we'll do a roundtable for the website.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, we can cast our votes.
You can do that, you know, count it down. The like, you know, do it in increments of five, maybe count down till you get to the top one or something.
I mean, speaking of like the projected value of these future picks, even the unprotected ones, even if those picks landed, you know, those teams ended up being one of the worst teams in the league, which I don't think anyone's reasonably saying that Dallas or that Miami would be one of the worst teams in the league when their pick came unprotected. And then the Memphis pick, I mean, that gives them all next season. And then hypothetically, they get another draft pick to build on that and whatever they might get from Conley. Like all of those picks, even if they come in stronger drafts, you have to expect that they're going to be slotted six or worse. And that's in a best case scenario that isn't lottery luck. So I don't feel like those future picks are more swings at the axe at the draft, which is something that I want, but I want them in volume spread out. I don't want, the Memphis pick or whatever pick is the big hang up. I don't feel like that should be the case. I think a lot of those future picks as individual picks are too valued. The Pelicans should be looking at a volume of future picks when it comes to Anthony Davis trade.
Unless you get blown away by personnel talent. I mean, you know, because if you get a whole bunch of personnel, like if the Celtics gave you all the players, they're not going to give you four picks, right? So
yeah, if you have a situation like that where they're giving you all the players, then the Celtics are probably going to want to keep more of their picks they have this year. And you can say, we want two picks, but we don't want any of them this year. We just want the Memphis pick in your 2021 pick that you put, I don't know, slap like 1 through 4 protections on it just in case.
Right. All right. Well, that was interesting. Now let's get on to what we've promised folks, the wild card edition of our trade partners. We were each assigned one, but I know a couple of you guys have changed your assignments. So we're going to start with the person who actually did the one that he said he was going to do. And I did mine the right way. So we're going to start with Kevin. And Kevin has the Phoenix Suns, one of his favorite trade partners. He's tried to involve the Suns before, but now he gets to play with them directly. So Kevin, what have the Suns brought us?
Okay, so let me preface this by saying we all know that Robert Sarver is a terrible owner. But one thing that you can't say about him is that he doesn't try to land big fish. So I could see him really making a push to try to get Anthony Davis. We see every year he's making some kind of move to try to get, you know, Tyson Chandler before I mean, he ended up getting them this year, but he tried to get them earlier. He tried to get other big name free agents. Always, they always make a big splash. Well, attempt to make a big splash, and it never really pans out. They sort of have, you know, what the Knicks go through as well, where they lose out on the free agent, and then they get them years later when they're like on their last legs, like they did this year with Tyson Chandler and Trevor Ariza. So I don't think it's out of bounds to say that they would possibly make a push to try to acquire Anthony Davis and bring him over there. And this has nothing to do with the fact that Monty Williams is there. I don't think that that's really a piece to sell to Anthony Davis, because we know behind the scenes there was some issues with Monty Williams and Anthony Davis's father. And, you know, it's not to say that that relationship was as good as the national media likes to pretend it is. So it might not be a selling point for Anthony Davis to stay there long term. But I could see the Suns thinking that it is and trying to do that. So what I have here, this is basically if you're kind of going scorched earth and you want to start all over. We're trading Anthony Davis and Solomon Hill to the Suns. And in return, we're getting Mikal Bridges, who is a really good defensive small forward that I like very much. And possibly will become a good offensive player. He's an okay offensive player, but I think he projects really well. He has a very long wingspan. He's very athletic. I think he would be a nice fit to groom with Zion. And then Elia Kobo, which is kind of just a throw-in young guard to try to see if there's anything there. You could leave him out of this trade if you want. He's not like a piece. I was just like, okay, let's just get another young guy here. And then Tyler Johnson has a $19.4 million opt-in on his contract, which he's surely going to pick up. And he comes over, and obviously he's not part of the future, but he makes salary work. And, you know, he's a serviceable player. You could at least play him, whereas we couldn't play Solomon Hill last year. So, you know, he's there, or you could package him together with, say, Etuan Moore or whatever. Other picks to get something else later on, but this is mainly about draft picks. So you would get the number six pick in this draft. You would get Milwaukee's 2020 first round pick. I would do this trade before the draft, so you could also get you wouldn't get the 2020 from the Suns, because if they have Anthony Davis, they're probably going to have a better season, but the likelihood of him staying there is low, so you would probably rather have the 2021. So then you would get 2021 and 2023 from the Suns, and also you would get their number 32 pick in this draft, which is their second round pick. So you're basically getting four first round picks, a second round pick, and Mikal Bridges is what you would be getting. And then in this scenario, you would probably keep Drew just for this year, then trade, you know, for mentorship, setting a tone, and then trade them the next year to continue the rebuild, unless, you know, things really click somehow with this young roster. And then for the Suns, you know, I didn't take back Ayton. I know some people, I've seen other trades with the Suns where people say you get Ayton back, but I don't necessarily want Ayton. I don't think he really fits well with Zion long-term. Now, if you want to take him to use as a trade chip somewhere else, I get that, but I think for the Suns, it's important to keep them because they can sell Anthony Davis on the fact that you don't have to do any of the dirty work down low. You don't have to set the screens. You don't have to battle guys for boards. You know, you don't have to defend the big guys in the paint. And then they'll have a core of Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, and Anthony Davis to fit around. And then, you know, they could bring back Kelly Oubre or whatever. So they can put together a team that seems like it could work. So I think it potentially works for everybody. It just depends on if the Pelicans really want to tear it all down and restart where draft capital is your main asset coming back.
Yeah, before I pass it to Dave, I just want to go back to your Ayton point. And I know, look, there are things to like about DeAndre. We saw it when the Suns played the Pelicans. He was able to score on the block relatively efficiently against Anthony Davis. I think he missed one shot that night when they were at the Smoothie King Center, Ollie. only 9 for 10 from the field that night or something like that.
Yeah, he was very effective. Anthony played a little soft, though, we noticed.
Yeah. My issue with Ayton is much like is probably the same as yours. This is a guy going back to college, does not protect the rim at all. I mean, averaged less than a block this season. Even at Arizona when he was in college, didn't block shots. And the one thing we know, well, one of the things that we've been kind of firm on is that if you're going to have Zion Williamson, you better have somebody long who can protect the rim somewhat. Better be able to block guard the paint. Because that was obviously, even with Anthony Davis, a huge problem for the Pelicans this season. Fisher, what's your reaction to Kevin's proposal there?
I'm just not a fan of what Phoenix Suns can offer. I mean, I know, like, I like the idea of the Phoenix Suns as a third team that maybe takes something and facilitates. But if you're talking about a pick-heavy trade from the Suns, and then you're just going to get some wings out of it, and you're not getting Ayton or Booker, I'm not sold on that one. That's just my opinion.
How about you, Ollie?
Now I'm in the same boat as Fish. I don't think we need to be kicking like rocks like this. I mean, that's what makes this exercise hard to begin with. I don't want to shoot down Kevin because.
Don't get me wrong. This is not one of my favorite trades out there at all. It's just like when you're looking around at other wild card teams that might be interested that could have something that they would throw out there. This is what I came up with. But
yeah, if they're not giving up Booker, I mean, you just have to pass. You know, I don't care what they put together, especially if it's just a one-on-one team deal. You know, I just don't see it.
What if TJ Warren were involved? Just to throw that out there.
You know how much I love TJ Warren? I wouldn't do this trade if TJ Warren was in it. Because I feel like this trade, the thing about this trade is that it's starting over with a bunch of assets, kind of doing a Celtics kind of rebuild, and then you throw Warren in there, then it just doesn't do that anymore.
Just throwing it out. Just saying.
No, I mean,
I knew you were high on TJ, and I like his game a lot too. I think he's improved tremendously over the last couple of seasons, especially under some difficult circumstances, obviously, in Phoenix.
Yeah, and I think it would be kind
of... One thing that's worrying about him, though, I used to love him too, but then I started reading stuff, especially this year, about his, you know, motor and work ethic, especially on the defensive end, and then offensively, he really turned into kind of a black hole. So all that type of stuff kind of scares me when you Is consider what we're trying issue? To build here in New Orleans.
Like, how much of this, though, I mean, again, we're taking people from bad cultures.
Oh, exactly.
A lot of these players are coming from places that have not won because they're trying to jumpstart that themselves by taking on Anthony Davis. Outside of Boston, most of the teams that we've talked about are teams that are relatively either just starting to win, like Brooklyn,
David?
Really bad. Huh? Hello?
Is she there?
Hello?
Yeah, no, I thought you were. I didn't understand it was even thrown to me.
Oh no, I was just saying that. So yeah, these are mostly bad teams. So the players that we get are coming from bad cultures. So in a lot of regard, anyway. So I think that if you get them in a better environment, hopefully, again, you put them in a place where they're relatively young enough. We're all probably the players that you get back are going to be 25 and under. So I think there's still time to salvage some of these guys. If you're getting extreme problems, guy don't like to go to practice, stuff like that, that's a little bit more of a red flag to me. But if you worry about a guy's motor on a team that knew he's going to win less than 20 games, you know, it's harder for me to get mad at that for a young player. Unless I just look at film and I'm like, he's not even giving a damn.
I think when we're talking about like bringing in a guy with, maybe he's had a low motor and he's had a bad NBA experience up to this point. He hasn't had necessarily the right culture around him. If the Pelicans were further along, I'd be more welcoming to that situation. Right now where the Pelicans are, I want them as much as possible to invest in, number one, and I've talked about this many times in our group chat, I want them to have at least one asshole on the team. They have to have one. Because the franchise hasn't had one since I can't remember. Like, you'd have to go to, like, it was probably Chris Paul was the last
Chris
time
Paul,
that they had
exactly.
One.
Yeah. Yep.
And then
David West and Tyson were assholes on the court. I mean, they were all like, they're not assholes in the locker room, but they were definitely assholes on the court.
Well, yeah, but like, you need one on the court.
All three of them were assholes on the court. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if the report comes out sometime during the summer that the Pelicans were looking to fill another assistant coach role and they've decided that Alvin Gentry is bringing in David West, a franchise guy, I would be all about that. But they need at least one asshole in the locker room. And then the rest of them, I just want it to be hard workers, people that are not going to be distracting to Zion. If you're trying to teach somebody – because we believe and we've seen that Zion has this incredible motor, he's always going 100%. We don't have to worry about him. He's still taking a substantial step up from going from college to the NBA. And there's going to be, you know, a lot of attention on him from the coaching staff. You can't divide that attention too much because, oh yeah, we have to remind TJ Warren that he's in the NBA and he should work for this. Just because he's got a smooth jumper, that doesn't mean you just take every jumper you have and you have to put in the effort on the defensive end too. For me personally, I don't want those kind of challenges in the locker room, which is why a lot of the Phoenix guys to me aren't very attractive except for Bridges. That would be really the only guy that I'm like, ooh, that sounds fun.
All right, so Phoenix as an individual partner, I think we're all down on Phoenix, but as a third team, there may be something that they can offer for trade purposes. Is that the consensus, guys?
Yeah, sure. Sorry, Monty Williams.
All right, so now we'll move on to one of you mystery guys. Ollie, how about you? Who did you eventually settle on?
Well, you know what? I am going to end up, you know, doing the Philadelphia 76ers and focus on Ben Simmons, because there's been a lot of talk this past season, you know, rumors of how would he fit in New Orleans. And before that trade request Anthony Davis made, if you guys may remember, you know, Bill Simmons of the Ringer, Zach Lowe, they all kind of talked about, hey, what about flipping Ben Simmons for AD? Well, since that time, a lot's happened. and the biggest detractor, I'm gonna go through the negatives first, because I think everybody's got to understand just how difficult and uninviting a package seems to be revolving around Ben Simmons for AD. Look, if everybody's proclaiming you've got to develop Zion, you've got to trust that his talent's going to take over and you don't want to limit him in any way, well, the best vision of him currently right now, not having that jumper, but having all this, you know, athletic ability, you know, vision that could develop, this ball handling that could develop. Everybody's talking about he could be the next, you know, maybe something prototypical, the next Giannis or something like that. Well, that's exactly what Ben Simmons is right now. People are saying, hey, give him the keys on some team, surround him with shooters and let him go. Because Philadelphia, honestly, has been kind of a train wreck situation for him. You know, he's had a little bit of maybe, you know, issue in the past with Joel Embiid. But the bigger thing is Jimmy Butler. The guys that they brought in, it took the ball out of his hands. And as we saw in the playoffs, you know, towards the end of the games, he's not even getting touches. And they're having him stand in the corner while Butler acts as the de facto point guard. So you got to think he's not happy and he wants to get out. But again, you're going to send him to a team like the New Orleans Pelicans, who, by the way, we've got to mention, Ben Simmons is a client of, guess who? Rich Paul and Clutch Sports. So how would Rich Paul, you know, look at a deal like this, flipping his clients from one city to another, when I have a feeling that neither one of his clients want to be in their respective cities they are in now? So I just see problems up and down. And furthermore, to make a deal happen, you know, because of the way the salaries are structured and all that stuff right now, we couldn't swing a deal for Ben Simmons anyway until after free agency, you know? So I don't like it, but the only way it would happen, now for those that still hold out hope, you've got to hope that A, Griffin wants to wait until after free agency, because he thinks so highly of Ben Simmons. He thinks that somehow Simmons and Zion can work together. And then B, you've got to get, you know, confirmation from Simmons himself, because from everything we've heard, despite the fact that he went to LSU, I don't want to hear people mention that anymore. You know, he does not have ties. He did not want to be here. Yeah, and nobody better than Grubb to speak on that. I'm sure he will. But there's really – I don't see any positives. So, yeah, it's a great thought. You give him the ball in an Alvin Gentry system. Hey, let him go. And, hey, you've got maybe two guys that are wrecking balls, Zion and Ben Simmons. But I don't see how you can build a team around two big non-shooters like that. So I hate the deal, even though I was supposed to come up with a deal. I thought it was important just to talk about a potential deal with Philly. Because they're not going to flip Embiid, guys. I mean, you've got to think they rank, and I've heard Elton Brand is so high on this guy that he wouldn't trade him straight up for Anthony Davis. So you have to look at what they've got next, and that's Simmons. And I just don't see it. So I wanted to talk about it, even though I didn't offer up a deal, but it would be Simmons, and then I think you would have to honestly get a third team involved if you're really trying to want to make it work. I don't know who it would be. I was messing around with like grabbing the Heat, the Wizards, trying to, because all these teams have their own problems, but I wasn't able to come up with anything good.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. One, Ben Simmons has no desire to come to New Orleans. None whatsoever. He's already shown that he wants to be in a major market, and he wants the celebrity part of this. We know that. I mean, it's pretty clear. He's already dated one Kardashian,
mm-hmm.
a Jenner. He dated a Jenner. So we don't need to bring that down here anymore. We don't need any more of them. And then, I don't think Ben Simmons is one of those people. Even if you took away that part of it, I don't think he's another one of those people you want to introduce into your locker room. Because I saw what he was at LSU, and I saw how he did not lead those guys. He didn't. It was one thing not to want to be in college, and I get that. These guys know it's a way station. But he had no loyalty to anyone, and he left those guys out there to swing based on his decisions. So I'm not high on Ben Simmons as an individual. Yes, he's very talented, but I just don't want to put the ball in the hands of a guy who's afraid to shoot a jump shot, because then he becomes completely invaluable to you. I mean, you know, completely worthless to you at the end of a game, and he can't make his free throws. He's a very good defender. We know that. He's a very good passer. We know that. But the lack of shooting, the lack of desire to shoot, and the inability to shoot free throws are all very – and his personality are all problems for me. And like you said, I don't think Philly has the assets, because their bench was struck dry when they gave up the mm-hmm. assets to get Tobias Harris. And then with them having to spend the money they're going to have to retain, they got to keep one of the two. I just don't know what Philly's going to have to give. That's like – to me, it's squeezing blood from a turnip. Kevin?
Yeah, Fish, Kevin, I want to get your takes on what you think about a possible Ben Simmons trade.
Well, this is what I think. If you're trading for Ben Simmons, I would rather trade for a guy who I think is somewhat similar in Aaron Gordon. Like, I would see Aaron Gordon and Zion fitting better than I would see Ben Simmons in Zion fitting together, because Aaron Gordon is the same kind of super athlete. He's a little bit better shooter. He's he's not the passer or playmaker that Simmons is, but I mean, he did average, I think 3.7 assists this season. He's a decent passer. And I think if you shift both of those guys to more of a center role, they would be better players. And obviously Simmons isn't going to get that in Philly, except for when they stagger him and Embiid. But I think the same thing is true for Aaron Gordon. If you made him a center with Zion, I think that could work really well. And you're talking about, you know, and I just think those guys are a little bit similar. And I think the package you could get from Orlando would be better, because Philly has already depleted their picks because of, trading for Tobias and Jimmy Butler and all those other guys like Covington and Saric are gone. So there's really not much else to send you that entices you. So I definitely wouldn't trade for Ben Simmons because all we've talked about is how you need shooters to help Zion, even if it's not necessarily just from the point guard position, which if you're projecting Ben Simmons as a point guard, but also as another big, you need another stretchy big, and you're not getting either from Simmons or anything else in that deal. So I don't think it makes sense. If I wanted a player like him, I would then turn to the Orlando Magic and try to get Aaron Gordon and maybe like Mo Bamba, Fultz, take a chance on Fultz and some first round picks or something like that, or even throw Fournier in there if you want some more shooting or something. I don't see a deal with Philly that makes any sense.
Fish?
Kevin covered it.
Fish, just real quick, do you think – here, let me just ask this question just to change it up. Do you think Philly would have any interest, and do you think any team should try and pursue what Dell Demps maybe try with DeMarcus and AD, and that is going big with Embiid and AD?
I don't think that that's really their play. I can see how, hey, why don't we go the completely opposite direction? But I think Philly's looking at it as they were, I mean, they were four bounces away from, you know, going to overtime in game seven. I mean, now isn't the time to blow it up. Now, it might be blown up outside of their control because they have multiple unrestricted free agents. But I don't think that a trade like that is the direction that Elton Brand would pursue.
All right.
Is that good, Ollie?
That's great. Yeah, let's move on to something else. Because, yeah, I don't want to dwell on something that's just crazy unlikely.
But imagine the dunks if you had Aaron Gordon and Zion on the same team. That would be
something. It'll look like Uncle Drew. It'd be like Uncle Drew, man. He'd be out there doing Casper for you.
So does that mean we got to then get Zach LaVine somehow on our team too?
No.
Are we just gonna be fun dunking on people and not winning games? No, I'm just kidding.
We've done that already.
Yeah, right. and without the fun.
Yes, there was no fun. You originally got signed Sacramento and you rejected them on the grounds that it just was not fair to do what you wanted to, what it would take to that franchise. So
it wasn't fair because a couple of things. If there's one other, and Sacramento isn't a small market, but if there's one other NBA team that we feel like a connection to is New Orleans Pelicans fans, and I know Kevin feels the same way, it would be Sacramento. Mm-hmm. So that's not a team. But if you were asking, hey, what if you could flip Anthony Davis for a guard to be beside Drew Holiday? That would be my first choice, obviously, would be De'Aaron Fox. But I don't think that that's fair to discuss with the Sacramento Kings. But what I will go is just a couple hundred miles north to Portland and ask you guys, do you think Portland would consider throwing CJ McCollum and then other stuff to New Orleans to pair Anthony Davis with Damian Lillard?
That's interesting.
I thought about this too, and I think they would jump at the opportunity. I really do. I think
because Portland,
they've consistently made the playoffs, but you know what? They've usually been one and done. We've seen that they need help. They need to go slightly different directions. So, Fish, I think it's a very entertaining idea. I just don't see David Griffin going that route.
Yeah. I definitely see why Portland would do it. My questions are, you know, CJ's not so young anymore. He's not old, but he doesn't necessarily fit Zion's timeline. He fits Drew Holiday's timeline. But then do you want a two combo guard backcourt? You know, it was sort of my issue when a lot of people were pushing a Bradley Beal trade. It's like, yeah, but then you're basically just another two combo guard backcourt. And no real true point and no real dynamic playmaker, or, you know, Drew doesn't want to be on ball. So then you have those problems again. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Well, a couple of things on that. One, if you look at the times that CJ McCollum has operated in the Portland offense, when Damian Lillard isn't on the floor, he can be, you know, your quote unquote lead guard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Alvin Gentry would love to have a situation where he doesn't have one de facto point guard, but also Drew Holiday doesn't have that entire burden. So they can just split it up and, you know, they'll mm-hmm. alternate bringing up the ball or initiating the offense. And then one of the things, McCollum isn't a bad defender, and he's actually really long for his height, but he's on the short side. But when you have a backcourt right now in Portland of Lillard and McCollum, neither one of those guys are what you would consider plus defenders. If you pair McCollum with Holiday, it gives him more of a break. And then the other thing that I was looking at when I was digging through what Portland could offer is, one, they could throw in Anthony Simmons, who's on a rookie deal. He was a rookie. He played sparingly, but he's got 3 years left on his rookie deal. They could also hypothetically throw in Zach Collins, which would give you a big that might fit a little better than some of the other options we've talked about with Zion Williamson. And they have all of their future first-round picks. Now, they don't have any of their seconds, but they have all of their future first-round picks to offer in a trade. So you could still do a pick-heavy trade that isn't necessarily high-value picks, but we've seen what Langdon can do late in the draft, or what he has done in his short history as an assistant GM with the Brooklyn Nets. And then you get the short-term boost with McCollum, and then you just have the draft capital behind it, where you could say, hey, you're 19, you're 21, you're 23, McCollum and either Collins or...
Definitely Collins.
Or both, or we'll take both, and then we'll eat one of the salaries you're trying to move, like we'll eat Evan Turner and save you some, you know, some millions of dollars if you eat Solomon Hill. So it's mm-hmm. $6 million savings on the Blazers side. That could be a situation that might work. The only thing is that Portland would pretty much have to look at it and say, this is all the farther we think you guys can take us, and we're going to go with Lillard and try to pair him with Anthony Davis. That would be my biggest concern on that trade is less how does it build the Pelicans, and more, I don't know if I want to send Anthony Davis to a good franchise with a true alpha dog where he can be who he needs to be, which is just a supporting character for somebody else's team.
Yeah, I think for Portland, that's like the Kawhi Leonard deal. They get the better player, and you get. I mean, I'd be worried about CJ with his height. That's an issue for me. Is again, you're still staying pretty relatively small in your backcourt as people are getting longer. And again, he's a mid-range guy predominantly. Likes to do move without the basketball. I see why Portland would do it in a heartbeat, because I think if you have Lillard and Davis, you put yourself with the rest of those guys that they have guys who know their roles already. They are an established team in that regard. And so if they don't give up most of their rotation outside of McCollum and a couple other pieces, they still have a chance to get back to the Western Conference Finals. But I don't think they have the picks or the players, enough players to make me excited about it.
It's definitely more short term. But the thing is that of all of the players we've discussed as a possible incoming trade asset for the Pelicans, which one of them is actually a better NBA player right now than CJ McCollum?
Mm-hmm. Would you rather have CJ McCollum or Bradley Beal?
For me, I would rather have...
That's what I'm thinking in my head right now.
Well, here's the thing, and I haven't dug too much into what else the Wizards could offer in terms of picks and things like that, because they're similar in age. If I remember correctly, Beal is bigger. Beal, we've seen what Beal can do as the league guard, and it'd be a very similar situation to the idea that I'm discussing here with McCollum. It would really come down to, and I'd have to research more in terms of what other stuff could Washington offer. And then there's the very, like, when you're talking about either McCollum or Beal, you're talking not the 2021-2022 season. If you're going to keep them when they become free agents, you're going to pay them $40 million. Mm-hmm. And then if it's really working and you want to keep that guy and you want to keep Drew, now you're talking about an $80 million a year backcourt. You're talking about, and the other thing with that is that those guys are going to be in their early, late 20s, rolling into their early 30s, and you're talking about a contract that looks a lot like what Chris Paul's contract does, but those guys are, as much as we love them, lesser NBA players than Chris Paul was when he signed his contract.
Beal's 2 years younger and 2 inches taller, but it helps you.
But he's a much bigger injury risk. Remember all his stress fractures, too. Even though we got Aaron Nelson, I know. But, yeah, that's the one thing I'm thinking about, because he and Drew both almost simultaneously. Remember, they were dealing with the same type of leg issues for the longest time.
Beal does miss games pretty much every season.
I'm looking. He played 82 last year. And
how many minutes has he played in his career? Because I'm looking at Drew, and Drew's at 21,500.
He's played 16,779 minutes.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, I like Beal's passing. I think that would work better than McCollum. I feel like he's a grittier defender. He's not as easily, you know. McCollum seems – you just set a good screen on him or you just make a good move, you can get by him. But with Beal – go ahead, Dave.
I would just say Beal is less prone to prolonged episodes where he's not scoring. And we saw – there are times in the playoffs where you saw McCollum not really be there. So if out of the two, I think Beal can get to the rim a little bit better. He's stronger. So I think when his outside shot isn't there, I could trust Beal with creating some offense for himself to find a way to get himself into rhythm. And I think McCollum can go games either in the regular season or in the postseason where he is a non-factor offensively.
I mean, and Beal did have – he had 5 rebounds a game, 5.5 assists, and got to the line 5.5 times a game. I think that's a big difference there.
Yeah, and I mean, shooting-wise, I mean, Beal gives you, what, 38% from three? Beal's young, like you said, younger, bigger, and able to get to the rim, I think, a lot better. I think Beal would be the guy. If I'm going to have to pay one of them, I'd much rather pay Beal.
We're neglecting, you know, the biggest thing in a Wizards trade for Kevin. We have to make
Well, Satoransky's a free agent, so, you know.
Oh, he did sign a 1-year deal, right? Trade. Yeah.
But we get him at free agency. We don't need a trade for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that part is over.
Satoransky and Ed Davis are free agents this year, David. So
Fish go. What are you trying to say, Fish?
Oh, well, I mean, talking about Beal and McCollum, I mean, if we're talking about adding that level of guard, my play in that situation is still hoping that Kyrie Irving ends up in Brooklyn and Brooklyn decides to let D'Angelo Russell walk and then throw all the money at D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah.
Because I feel like D'Angelo Russell, at the age he is now, is a far more capable NBA player than either Beal or McCollum were at the same age. He's just as big as Beal with a much bigger wingspan, a much better standing reach. I was looking on the NBA defensive stats, which aren't necessarily the best that you can find, but across the board, D'Angelo Russell, you know, when he's challenging shots, has a greater, you know, negative impact, which you would expect because he's got a standard reach edge on him about 4 inches. And D'Angelo Russell is a far better facilitator than either of those guys. And he's a much better shooter off of the bounce than either of those guys. Beal has very good 3-point numbers, but if you dig farther into it on NBA stats, Beal's making all of his money being a catch and shoot guy off of John Wall, not really creating his own shot off the bounce, which is something that we know D'Angelo Russell can do for himself. And you think about how that stresses a defense and what that can create for Zion Williamson, not just in terms of pick and roll where he's going to the basket, but short roll situations where he would be able to operate in a 4-on-3 situation that we've seen Draymond Green really excel at. When you're talking about Zion Williamson, is a really high IQ guy who makes the right play. He's not just an athlete. So, I mean, if we're talking about those guards, I still circle back to, can we throw max money at D'Angelo Russell, who went to Ohio State University? I just need to mention that for
And you won't get any argument from me there. I mean, he's, like you said, he's a much better natural passer than either of those two guys. And then he fits Zion's timeline a lot better. And, you know, I think he brings a lot of swagger also with him to the team, which is needed too.
Do you guys think that David Griffin will balk at a guy like Russell? I mean, we know what happened with him with Nick Young at the Lakers, what Magic and Byron Scott and a few others said about him. But I'm referring to this latest, you know, the smuggling weed thing. Do you worry about Russell prioritizing basketball enough in Griffin's eyes?
I mean, he has Trade and Langdon right sitting next to him in his ear, so he knows everything he needs to know about what that experience was like last year. So if Trajan has concerns or if Trajan can vouch for him, I think that answers your question right there.
And I'm not going to sweat what a 20-year-old kid does when he does something stupid. I mean, these kids live on social media. Look, today LeBron James' son was all over social media because he was just cursing and talking about women and stuff like that. And he should be as well aware of anybody as to what public image means. And he's making mistakes. So I think D'Angelo Russell made mistakes. He was a kid. You take him and you pluck him out of Ohio State. But again, coming out of Ohio State, people viewed him as one of the most mature players in that draft class. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, I think he's made some mistakes, certainly. But he's still 20. He's 20. And I mean, I just think that for people to make these assessments of people's character at the age of 20, when they haven't done anything that's really like really bad, that when you were 19, if one of your friends was sitting around, if we all had cell phones and they were joking about how they cheat on their girl, yeah, we wouldn't have posted it, but you might have recorded it and showed it to a friend of yours for a joke. And that's basically what he did. And then smuggling weed, look, he's 20 again. He's stupid. He did something that a stupid 20-year-old would do. And so, I mean,
let's just say that smuggling weed isn't necessarily stupid. The idea of putting it into an Arizona tea can that you can't bring on a plane to begin with, that was stupid. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think anybody this day and age cares if anybody's smoking weed or
no.
You know, so that part I don't care about at all. I mean, you could question the IQ that this person has when it brings that in, but the violation is nothing. You know what I mean? So I don't, that doesn't bother me.
No, that wasn't the issue, the marijuana itself. Because again, Major League Baseball doesn't test for marijuana. The NHL does not test for marijuana. I don't really think it's only the NBA and the NFL that test. And the NFL tells you
when
to test.
Tests for it. I don't think
the NBA
does
not
test.
You're right. They don't test. The NFL.
I mean, they might say that they do, but the fact that we haven't heard of anybody getting popped for marijuana and I can't remember how long tells me that they don't actually test for it or they don't care.
Well, don't they like test them very early in the season and then they never test them again?
It's at the beginning. I think it's at the beginning of the season and at the end, and you know that they're coming. So I think guys, or that's, I may be thinking about the NFL. I don't want to say that. I think I may be thinking about the NFL because I think
that's going back to that. Yeah. I just want to circle back to IQ. I mean, the thing that I love about D'Angelo Russell is because I've watched enough him playing basketball that I know how he sees the floor. He has a high basketball IQ. The rest of that, I mean, not only is he a kid, but a lot of the time he's been surrounded by other kids. I mean, that Lakers locker room that he was brought into was a toxic waste dump, man.
Nick Young was the veteran.
Remember, we're talking about, I can't believe that he, I mean, we're not talking about we can't believe, but we're talking about him ratting on Swaggy P, bragging about the fact that he was cheating on his girlfriend. Like, that was the place he was at. That was his introduction to the NBA, and he did it in Los Angeles. That's not the best place for somebody to start their career.
During Kobe's last season.
Oh, yeah, and the Kobe farewell tour while you're at it. So I don't read a whole lot into that, but I've seen enough of him play basketball that I want that guy on my team, especially if he's going to be he's a great bridge between playing right away for Drew and building long-term for Zion.
Yep. Give me.
All right, so now we get to me. I had the Atlanta Hawks. And I actually, digging through the Hawks, I found a decent deal, I think. I think it's a decent deal. Now, would it happen? I don't know. But I'll give it to you guys and you tell me what you think. So the Pelicans give away Anthony Davis. And the Hawks give up John Collins, Kent Bazemore, Torian Prince, and this year's number 8. That's the deal.
And?
I think you've touched everything that David Griffin asked for. You're getting in John Collins, you get a potential All-Star. In Torian Prince, you have a very solid role player who's still under his rookie deal. In Bazemore, you have a guy who can contribute if you keep him. He's on the last year of his deal at $19.3 million. He can shoot the basketball, play solid defense. And then you get the number eight. You have the Hawks make that pick for you. And so essentially, you're getting Zion. You get John Collins, who would be a top five pick in this draft. You get Torian Prince, again, like I said, a solid role player. And that number eight is potentially your solution at the point guard position. And then I would throw the rest of my money, now that if I've got money, as the Pelicans, I'm looking at going after to fill my center spot. I would either try to steal Dwayne Dedmon, who's now a free agent, and you have a guy who can both protect the rim and shoot the three, or I'm going after Brook Lopez from Milwaukee because they have guys like Middleton and that they have to re-sign, and Lopez may be the guy who's the odd man out there. And he, again, a guy who can get you 100 block shots and shoot the three and is a very effective guy in boxing out and getting rebounds. So I think those four things would get you I could ask for more picks. You could ask for more picks, but I'll let you guys pick it apart.
Go ahead, Fish. You were about to start talking first, I think.
First thing is that I was going to say and, because every single trade we ever produce, I always ask myself, is that the trade that Griffin would propose first? And it's always, no, he'd ask for more, like maybe to be able to wiggle back to that place. I wonder about how much overlap you have with Collins and Zion. Is one of those guys going to be able to get to the point where they can stretch the floor that the two of them can coexist? Or are you just getting John Collins because he's the great asset and eventually you're going to flip him because it's not going to fit?
Well, Collins is a very good shooter. He shot the ball very well from outside this year.
I mean, 35%, but he does look like
that's
he can
young
shoot.
Young guy, that's good. Is he gonna be able to shoot enough and at a volume that it works would be my first question. And then the second question is all the rest of it. I'm a Torian Prince fan. I think we think back to the draft that came out. I traded around a whole bunch of stuff in the SB Nation draft to get him. I think I shipped off Tyreek Evans. I'm sorry, Kevin. I've been a Bazemore fan, and I feel like he would be the kind of guy you want to have in your locker room. So a lot of that fits, but if you're looking at it from Atlanta's perspective, would they rather have their pillars of their organization be Trae Young and John Collins, who are kind of on the same trajectory and on the same timeline, or Trae Young and Anthony Davis, who are pretty far spread apart? And I think all of us will come back with Atlanta's going to say thanks, but no thanks, because they want to take their time a little bit with this and not just throw all their chips in right now. I don't feel like Trae Young's sophomore season is the time to try to cash in. That's my opinion on it.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Like, I was going to joke and say, how many first-round picks do we have to send to them to get John Collins? Because I love John Collins. But I just don't see it. You know, Atlanta has Trae Young, Herder, Collins to sort of build around. And I think that they're in the right spot where they want to be, and to rock the boat to send Anthony Davis over there, which is probably going to be a one-year rental because of where he's playing and the situation he's playing in. I just don't think that he sticks around there. So I don't see them rocking the boat, especially because Collins is such a promising young player. I mean, like we said, he's starting to stretch the floor. He's super athletic. I don't know if he's a natural five. He might be more of a power forward. So then if you're looking at the Pelicans, you're playing two power forwards, although I don't necessarily think that matters as much in today's NBA. And also, isn't Torian Prince going to be a restricted free agent? Does that throw a wrinkle in the,
No, it would be team option. He's under his team option.
Oh, okay. I thought
next year would be the qualifying offer.
Okay. No. Yeah. that, and I like him too, but I just don't. I agree with David. I just don't see Atlanta making this deal.
Here's the wild card in that deal, though. Atlanta only has $57 million on the books.
Right. Could they get another free agent?
So if you get AD to go to Atlanta, and again, Atlanta's been looking for somebody to fill that arena essentially since Dominique Wilkins left. They still have not been able to sell out the Phillips Arena on a consistent basis, even with the hair, you know, barbershop, even with the DJ, all the things that they have, they haven't been able to sell out. So let's say you get box office with AD, because now you have a legitimate all first team, all NBA guy that you can put out there. Atlanta is also a very popular city. You've got only $57 million committed because Dedmon's coming off the books. All these young guys that they have on their books are either at the end of their rookie deals, or the veterans that they have are about to come off their deals. So they would have plenty of money to go in. Even with the AD deal, they'd still have that $57 million sitting there. That's a lot of money for Atlanta to play with.
Yeah.
It just makes it hard.
I agree with that too, shot. But it just seems like the way that they, you know, the moves that they made last season, the guy they brought in to be their GM and the path they're on, they're trying to build through the draft. So, like, I would say if this was 2 to 3 years from now, perhaps, but it just seems like that's not how they want to build this team. I could be wrong, because, like you said, by acquiring Anthony Davis and still having room for another max guy, they make that work, but I don't know.
Well, you know, that was the whole point, was to throw stuff out. These were wild card teams. So these were just, you know, again, these were straight. We tried to play around within the rules and see if there was something interesting. People had asked about Atlanta at different points online. So, you know, and when we talked about it, we said, hey, this might be a good destination. And if it were, yeah, I think Griffin absolutely would want more. Atlanta does have some very attractive picks over the next several years. So, yeah, I think you would absolutely want more picks in the initial ask. But, yeah, I was just trying to figure out instead of figuring out what the original ask, I tried, kind of went to the end on that.
Well, I'll say this. I think your Atlanta trade is the most interesting of the ones that we've thrown out. Like, I would be the one I would be most interested in. I would definitely need a few more picks, I think. At least one more, if not two more. But
yeah, because you could go after the 2020 from Cleveland.
Yeah.
Let's say you threw in the 2020 from Cleveland with that 2019 number eight for this year. That makes that deal a hell of a lot more attractive, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah, so there's definitely something there. It just depends on if Atlanta's in that mode yet, and I don't know if they are, but you know, if they are, then that's something they could definitely consider, I think.
And I think all three of those players would thrive in this offense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, personnel-wise, they're fits. If you got the picks, it'd be nice. But, yeah, I think the biggest question, I absolutely agree with you guys, is does Atlanta want to try to take their big home run swing now on those guys? And, I mean, they might consider, again, if they bailed on Collins, it would be because of injuries. I think that would be the only thing, is because he played only 64 games last year. And that would be the only reason, but, you know, it's not like Anthony Davis is made out of concrete, so I don't know. Are there any other teams that we see that could be potentials, even though I know we struggled to kind of try to find fits, but are there any other teams that we think could just, even without looking and taking deep digs into them, that could come out of the woodwork possibly?
I mean, with like I mentioned earlier, Orlando, I would say, is possible. I could see Utah maybe engaging some sort of interest, but I just don't see what they really have that would interest the Pelicans unless they're willing to part with Donovan Mitchell, which I wouldn't think they would be. So I don't know.
Yeah, because Utah for me would have been a more attractive if Favors were still under contract. And they don't have – he'll be a free agent this offseason. And I don't think – without including Favors – I don't know what they have. Like I said,
I mean, it would have to be Mitchell and Ingles for me, and then
they're not doing that.
And they're not going to do that. Yeah.
Ollie, you see anybody else out there that could put something together that we're not thinking of?
I mean, what if Paul George and Russell Westbrook have it out at OKC, right? I don't foresee that happening, but you know, maybe OKC needs to shake things up, because they did have a really disappointing end to their season, not only the way they finished the regular season, but then in the playoffs. So I don't know. Because Russell Westbrook is one of Anthony Davis's best friends in the league. So things start, you know, with that. Would AD be willing to live in OKC if he could play with one of his best friends? I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. But
what are you going to get back from Oklahoma City that you really like? You think they're going to give you Paul George?
Oh, I would doubt it. I mean, but if you're Sam Presti and you just suddenly went through the season that they did, and maybe they don't have faith in, you know, I mean, we know what kind of player Russell is, right? And they were at their best when he literally at the start of the year, what was it, second or third month, he was literally taking a super back seat and letting Paul George, you know, shoot all the shots, be the focal point of the offense. I just don't think that's in what's Russell Westbrook's, you know, future to play like that. So I do think there might be a chance. Sam Presti might have to look to do something, shake up that roster somehow. But again, I see, that's why these are all wild cards. That's why none of these made the cut in our top six. So I think it's hard to find anything. I mean, we picked apart Kevin's Phoenix deal, your Atlanta deal, even though, you know, kind of like that. I couldn't even come up with a decent one for Philly, you know, and Fish didn't even try on Sacramento either. So, you know, it's not easy.
Yeah, we tried with Washington. We've tried with Orlando. We've tried.
Well, I have one more.
Okay.
One thing I want to get to, because Kevin loves these, I think 3 and 4 team deals are what we should be looking at. Maybe we should do a pot on that. Because, I mean, there's guys around the league like Pat Riley. There's certain GMs or owners that really want to swing for the fences. So could they somehow be included? That's what I was trying to come up with essentially today, but I failed.
One that I would say would be a wild card, because it's not necessarily the market that Anthony Davis would want to sign up for. But if you're talking about the Kawhi Leonard swing for the fences because you think you're close. I mean, Indiana was really good even after Oladipo went down. And if they feel like, I mean, Oladipo's a monster. If there's anybody that I would expect to recover ahead of schedule, Victor Oladipo is going to be up there on the list. So Indiana, I think, could build an enticing package that's fundamentally the cornerstone of it is Miles Turner as the incoming for the Pelicans. And Miles Turner is owed $18 million, and he's under contract for the next 4 years. So both of those pieces, the fact that he makes the money pretty easy to match, and the fact that he's under contract for a long time, makes him an attractive piece. I think we've already discussed how well he would fit with Zion. And then Indiana has all of their future first-round picks. So you could have a trade where you get maybe Miles Turner and Doug McDermott and Aaron Holiday and then a whole bunch of picks. And it doesn't sound great in the beginning, kind of like the Paul George, Victor Oladipo trade between Indiana and OKC didn't sound great, but it ended up working for both teams. If you end up going with, you bring in Turner as the center that you're going to get to play beside Zion, and you already know we have a big man, he can shoot the three ball. Not only can he shoot the three ball, his three-point numbers aren't built on he shot a whole bunch of spot-up corner three-pointers. He shot a lot of three-point shots above the break. And then, you know, Holiday's kind of a throw-in. McDermott gives you a little bit of a short-term answer on the wing, and then you have a bunch of future picks on that. That isn't a terrible package, because the jewel of the trade fits with your incoming superstar. He fits with your incoming superstar in terms of not just how they fit on the court, but their arc, you know, their future. He fits on the timeline better. And then they can throw a whole bunch of picks at it. And hey, if you hit on one of those picks that ends up being 18th or 20th or something like that, or Anthony Davis walks because it's Indiana and all he's really concerned about is getting to a big market, then those picks become substantially more valuable. So Indiana, if we're really talking about dark horses, I would say that the Pacers are in on that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that too. I mean, I threw them in my Boston trade package. So, like, I think there's hard to find another better big man in the league to fit with. Zion than Miles Turner, maybe Lauri Markkanen, but you know, you're not getting him from the Bulls. Other than that, I think Miles Turner would be the perfect fit. So if I was David Griffin, even if my Anthony Davis trade didn't involve Indiana, I would then try to see what it would take to get Miles Turner out of Indiana anyway, whether that's players and picks or whatever. As long as it doesn't cost you too much, I think I would be invested in that. And then, you know, I already made the argument for also throwing Drew Holiday a bone by getting his younger brother over here to play with him. But he also might be a good player. We don't know. And it's a position of need. So that also fits, I think. So I wouldn't mind that one either.
I want to love it, but I just can't go over the fact that, hey, you're going to ship Anthony Davis to a place that probably he wants to live in even less, right? And we saw the kind of commitment, which I thought and Grubb thought and a few of us else thought, that after he came back from that injury, once the Pelicans hit their tailspin, it wasn't that same consistent effort. Nowhere close to the guy we saw carry us to the playoffs the season before. So would he just come out of the gates next season for Indiana? And I have to think they'd be worried about it, but if he comes out like a turtle or just not even, you know, given 100% in each game, there's no way they're going to keep him, let alone even try and sell him on anything and get anywhere far like Kawhi Leonard did. I think Kawhi Leonard is a different – he's got a different build to him, the motor. If he's going to step out on the court and he feels good enough about his surroundings to where, you know, he doesn't feel pressure from teammates talking about him behind his back in the locker room like he did with the Spurs – he's going to go and give it his all. With Anthony Davis, I'm not sure what drives him or how you can get him back to playing 100%, giving 110% effort, unless he's in a situation in the city that not only he but the people around him want to live in. I mean, I think it's honestly that cut and dry. So I love the deal, Fish. I would love Kevin to see Miles Turner here, but I cannot see Indiana ever taking a chance on him after, you know, what they saw transpire in New Orleans.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, when you look at the history of guys of 80s level who've gotten traded in their primes, the biggest concern is always that you know from the start you're not getting equal value back. You know, you go back to the Shaq trade, and it was Lamar Odom, Ryan Grant, Caron Butler, and one number one. That's what they got for Shaq. And then you look at, you know, just recently, like you say, you look at the Kawhi Leonard deal, and it's DeMar DeRozan, who I don't think any of us are particularly high on. His advanced numbers are always show that the teams that he's played for do better with him on the bench than they do with him on the floor. So the Spurs end up with DeMar DeRozan and pieces to move Kawhi Leonard. So it's as much as, you know, I think that's my biggest conflict. And before we wrap, I just would like to hear from each of you guys. It's like, as much as we have gone through this process and we see what we like and you go through it and you're shopping and you look at the aisle and you grab the things that look really great, now you get to check out and you look at what you how much you can pay for it, and maybe you can't get everything that's in the cart. How much do you think the difference is going to be from the ask to the get? Start with Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to know because, you know, and maybe one thing that we haven't considered, and I've mentioned it in our DM chats, and also Joseph Billiott tweeted about it, but like, what if part of this meeting with David Griffin was, okay, you don't want to be here. We have a trade that we could possibly make with these teams. Would you opt in if we traded you to one of these teams, any of these teams? That way they at least have 2 years of Anthony Davis. And does that lead to getting a better haul back? Then if he doesn't do that, is that a conversation that they're having? I mean, I think if you get in 2 years, two solid years of Anthony Davis, then you're getting everything you want from that team. Whereas now, you know, with the uncertainty, you know, there might be a little bit of us getting, and I think Preston is very much on this train of thought that he thinks that we're overvaluing what we're going to get back because of that notion that he might not stay wherever he goes. And that people know that we have to trade him. And now also another thing to consider is that now Houston is in this market saying they're selling off all their players. Is James Harden available? And if James Harden's available and you're one of these top, you have one of these top packages for the Pelicans, would you rather have a player like James Harden who's at least a one-time MVP, if not going to be a two-time MVP, and a guy that can win you 50 games by himself and that is locked up for a few years on your roster and has shown that he can carry a team, whereas there's questions about that in his mentality when it comes to Anthony Davis and also whether he's committed and going to stay long-term. So do things like this mess up the market a little bit for Anthony Davis? I'm not sure. It is tough. I think no matter what, I think removing the dark cloud over the franchise is a bonus to begin with. And then as long as you get, you know, some pieces to work and build out a team, even if it's kind of starting from scratch, you're on the right path. I don't think you can expect to get equal value. I think you can expect to get some quality back, of course, and you should expect quality back. But I think there's also going to be a little bit of a benefit from just removing the circus from the locker room, in a sense. So even if you're getting less back than we initially thought, I don't think you should be down on the trade initially.
What about you, Griff? I mean, Fish. I don't know why I said I'm calling you Griff.
Thank you for the promotion, man. I appreciate that. I think it depends on which team you're talking about. In terms of how much the Pelicans might get, I think that's going to be mostly driven by which teams are involved in the bidding, because it only takes like two or three teams to really drive the bidding up. And in that respect, the Pelicans are in a position of strength because we all feel like the Lakers and the Knicks are going to be extremely motivated to make it happen. So with either of those teams, either you have a bunch of recent picks who turned into players who maybe have underperformed or don't have quite the reputation they had as players in the Lakers trade package, or you have a whole bunch of future picks from the Knicks. I think we focused a little bit on the Knicks players, and we pretty much said, the players aren't really what make the trade happen. It's all the future picks, including the number three this year. So I don't think we're shooting too far over the moon, but we do need to be prepared that it's going to be not less as much as it's going to be more complicated. I would be very surprised if it ends up being a two-team trade, just because I think once Anthony Davis is moving and a whole bunch of assets start getting out on the trade table, other teams are going to be interested. And so, like Ollie was saying, a team like Miami gets involved, and the teams that we've repeatedly mentioned, Indiana and Denver or Chicago, all of those teams might want one of those things that the Pelicans don't want. And when you get all of those other teams involved, then there's more chatter around the league. And as there's more chatter, the other teams that are competing to try to get Anthony Davis in the trade are aware of the bids that they have to beat. And there's, because like we were saying, when we were talking about three-team trades and with the Lakers and with the Knicks, if David Griffin says, we don't like some of the things that you would send us, but we don't want to have to be the ones that sell it, so you try to sell those other assets on the market. NBA GMs aren't going to be idiots. They're going to know that, the Knicks and the Lakers are suddenly asking me if I'm interested in Brandon Ingram or Kevin Knox or Dennis Smith Jr. or Lonzo Ball. They must be talking Anthony Davis trade with the Pelicans. So, right. So that alone, the churn of it over the next 3 weeks, I think increases the value that the Pelicans are going to get back, just because the demand is going to be there. But it's going to be easier for a team to make the Anthony Davis trade if they're making a trade with a whole bunch of future picks like the Knicks, especially if it's not necessarily your own future picks when you're talking about adding in those Dallas picks, than it is players when you're talking about, hey, can we get half of the Celtics rotation? I think those kind of expectations are a little high. Can you get Smart and Tatum and then maybe some future picks? Yes, but Smart and Tatum and Brown and can we sign Rozier and some of the other stuff that I've seen from people on Twitter. No, they're shooting for the moon. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Just my to opinion. Add to that, I would honestly throw Boston in there. I mean, you guys remember what Danny Ainge said at the trade deadline. He didn't just kind of casually mention that, hey, Boston wants in on the AD sweepstakes. He implored for them to wait. You know, he said he would throw them everything, that they would be aggressive in making a deal with all of their assets. And also mentioned was the fact that, you know, the decision on whether to chase Davis, it didn't matter whatever Irving would do. So I think we're kind of forgetting of just how determined and I still think that the Boston Celtics and Danny Ainge have the pressure of living, you know, in the shadows of their former glory as well. So I think they're going to be just as motivated as the Lakers and as the Knicks. So that's going to keep the price undoubtedly high. So that's why it's a little bit hard, like, for us determining, you know, other teams that could be in on. I think that's what makes this exercise hard, because other teams have to know that they're going to have to really throw in a lot more of their assets than they probably ever would ever want to, especially without any kind of guarantee on Anthony Davis. But yet again, at the end of the day, I still think there's going to be those three teams at a minimum that are going to be throwing the whole kitchen sink, you know, everything at the Pelicans and trying to get Anthony Davis on their team. And we don't know. I mean, I still think that Brooklyn and the Clippers, there's going to be another team that's really going to push hard. So long-winded answer, but yeah, grabbed by all of us. But I think there's no doubt. I don't think we're overvaluing anything, because there's going to be two or three teams at a minimum ready to give it up, give up all of it to get Anthony Davis on their squad.
They're just so – I think, you know, the thing we walk away from this, and obviously we're going to be doing a lot of other things this summer with free agency and with prospects as we get closer to the draft and those types of things. It's just when there are so many moving pieces with all of this. So many dominoes yet to fall. And it all goes back to Fisher's statement that he's been making through every one of these is that this deal has to get made before the draft. I think, you know, after the draft, everything changes for the Pelicans. So, I mean, I think that's the one thing, no matter we're talking players, picks, whatever, if we don't know about a deal by draft night, I think that that changes the game completely. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right.
I wouldn't say completely, because there could be a deal because everybody has to wait because to make, you know, the trade possible due to, you know, the CBA, that they have to wait. So picks will be made on draft night, but we won't know at the time that really it's the Pelicans telling whatever team, hey, I would prefer this. If we're going to do an Anthony Davis trade, get this guy, get this guy. So,
in that context, that's under the discussion that we had before, that those picks are made for the Pelicans. The deal has been agreed to behind the scenes, but we're waiting on the new calendar year. Da 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 da.
Right. I'm just answering. If we don't hear anything by draft night, I'm not going to be too fearful. I think if we don't start hearing rumors once free agency is approaching, then I'm going to get scared.
Well, I would also say in this day and age, like, we're going to hear it. Somebody's going to leak it. So. If they got to wait, you're gonna hear it at least by the next day. You know, it's going to come. Shams or Woj are going to come out and say something, you know.
Because we've seen it every year where, you know, they've had these agreements where you got to stop announcing trades and picks before the league does it. But these guys know, and there are a lot of people who are going to know that night who's making these picks and why. So I think it's going to come out regardless if somebody's making picks on the Pelicans' behalf.
And especially once you start seeing them, like, you know, telling Anthony Davis to stay away from the facility or whatever, you know, those kind of things will happen. Like they do with Chris Paul, you know.
Yeah. They don't want to get there. And I think we've done a great job on this. I just want to say for you guys in particular, I think I've been blown away by the amount of research we've done, the amount of stuff that you guys have brought to the table. So, I mean, I think we've done a really great job on this, and I look forward to the rest of the stuff that we do heading through this. I think it's been an awesome series, and I look forward to everything else that comes up next. And I hope the listeners have enjoyed it. I know that we've seen people in Boston pick it up. We've seen people, you know, all around the NBA reading and listening and watching. So I think we've tried our best to do a great service for the Pelicans fans and folks who are listening. And I think we're committed to doing it for the rest of this offseason and then the next season. Guys, is there anything else that we need to say before we finally cut out here after an hour and 40 minutes?
You said this was going to be a short one.
I thought it was.
Oh, well.
I broke my promise. Well, all right, since that's it, then thank you again for joining us on behalf of Kevin Berrios, David Fisher, Alec Osell, and myself, David Grubb. Thank you for listening, and tune in for more coming soon. Till the next time, let's go Pels.
Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Off the Glass, Nothing But Net, and Up and Under podcast networks. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.
Technology Truths, brought to you by GEICO.
Technology Truths.
Truth. Teenagers can communicate entirely in emojis.
How was the birthday party? Pizza slice, kitten, soccer ball, pineapple?
Truth. It's so easy to switch and save on car insurance at GEICO.com.
What are you talking about? Paperclip, shoulder shrug, high five, wizard hat? What?
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Your home is important. That's why GEICO helps make it easy to save on condo insurance. Because home is more than just a place. Home is where you took minimalism too far because there's only one chair in your entire condo and your only entertainment is one card. Not even a deck of cards, but a single card. And all your guests have to share one plate and one fork, but you're convinced that less stuff means more freedom. The GEICO Insurance Agency could help protect the overly minimalist broom closet you call home. Call GEICO and see how easy it is to switch and save on condo insurance.